Kulik on the right wing boards. Back to Komarov. His shot deflected in front of Roseanne. Rebound. Kulik scores. The puck hit Roseanne. Went right to Kulik. He put it away. 1-0 Buffalo.
Our own Paul Hamilton on the call for the Sabres Prospect Challenge. Jiří Kulik scoring the first goal of the Sabres Prospect Challenge last night. He added another one, highlight reel style, burning past someone, getting himself a mini breakaway, and then putting the goalie out in front of the building at Perry. That was a really nice move to ensure a 3-1 victory for the Sabres prospects over the Blue Jackets prospects. A game where they dominated, had the puck the whole time. It was a fun little environment. Columbus was hitting a lot. There were two fights in the game. Like, there was a lot of physicality, emotions, and speed. That's pretty much all it was there last night. And how do I know this? I was there. How do I really know this? Well, because I also saw Brayton Wilson and started bugging him at work half of the time while he was trying to do his job. And if there's anything responsible about me, it wasn't that night, because I was just trying to bug him, Paul, and Brian as much as humanly possible. And I think we have Brayton now.
Yes, I'm here.
There we go. Yes, there it is.
I didn't know what kind of setup I was getting.
Oh, you were getting none. You were getting no sort of setup from me there. It was pretty much me trying to mess with you again.
Yeah, I get it. It's nothing new with you.
But we did also have some meaningful conversations about the game that was actually going on in front of us as well. Jiří Kulik looks like he doesn't need these tourneys anymore. Ryan Johnson really doesn't look like he needs these tournaments anymore. And those two, of course, should be looking like the best players on the ice, and they once again were against Columbus.
Yeah, I mean, those are the two guys, I mean, you would arguably say needed to look the most head and shoulders above everybody else on the ice, especially amongst their peers on the ice. I mean, it's these type of tournaments. It's the type of tournaments like the World Junior Championship where the best prospects need to be the best players amongst those that are also on the ice that are similar age or the same age out there. Jiří Kulik yesterday looked just that part. And Ryan Johnson, who's a 2019 first round pick, so he's actually got a few extra years on a lot of these other prospects, definitely looked very solid back on the back end, a guy that was just controlling the pace of play, doing everything to really kind of help get everything jump started for the Sabres back in their own end in transition, heading the other way down to the offensive end. And then Jiří Kulik was just doing what he could to get into scoring spots, get other players set up for opportunities. And again, just looking like a bigger, stronger, smarter, and faster guy out there against everybody else.
Brayton Wilson joining us here on the Western Hotline. Brayton, outside of those two, I mean, Roseanne, you have Anton Wahlberg, you have Noah Östlund. There are so many players to look out for in these prospect games if you're going to them or you're listening with Brian, Paul, and you on the call. Who are the players that kind of stood out to you last night other than Ryan Johnson and Jiří Kulik?
I think the first player that comes to my mind in terms of another player that stood out was Noah Östlund. 22 first round pick is a guy who's just super cerebral on the ice. He's always got his head up. He's always looking for the puck. He's hungry for the puck constantly. And then when he has the puck on his stick, he's just got that second sort of nature where he doesn't have to look to where he's, you know, how he's puck handling. He doesn't need to look at all down at the puck. He just knows it's on his stick. He's got that sense that he's going to make the right play by looking at, you know, how things are developing, whether he's just going to fire a puck on net to create a chance that way, or he's going to find an open man across the ice for a pass and try to set up a scoring chance that way. And yesterday, I remember talking with you where, you know, I think looking back on it, it's almost looked like, and I think you might agree with me here, he almost looked like at a point he kind of had ants in his pants where he was just super, you know, jittery and just looking like he wanted to do everything with the puck. And then in the third period, he got a little more ice time because there were some penalties and some fights that happened. So, you know, they were just rotating him, Anton Wahlberg in there, who's another guy that I really liked yesterday. I'll get to him in a bit. But Noah Östlund, just he would go out there and he just looked like he had all the confidence in the world to go make a play, to create a scoring chance, to really dictate the pace of play for the Sabres. And really, I mean, the Sabres, they controlled much of the play all night. I mean, they put up 41 shots on goal and made Columbus just, they were just fishing. I mean, they were just scrambling all night trying to contain the Sabres. But Noah Osland was a huge part of that. And Anton Wahlberg as well. Wahlberg, he's a guy that probably needs another year in Rochester before he really forces the hands of the Sabres organization to maybe make him a full-time NHL player, maybe 2 years. But he's a guy yesterday that he knows he's bigger than most everybody out there on the ice. He knows he's stronger than most everybody out there on the ice. And there were a couple of times where he just used his big, strong legs to generate good acceleration, good speed up the middle. And he was going through players, going through defensemen to go after plays and try and generate scoring chances. Now, when he gets to playing more in the AHL and if he gets to the NHL, he's going to learn pretty quickly. He can't necessarily do that. But again, in tournaments like this, you're going against other guys that are your age or similar to your age, not too far off. So again, you want to go out there and you want to prove that I'm better than everybody else out here on the ice. And I feel like that Wahlberg and Noah Osland were a couple of guys that were doing just that last night.
Yeah, I remember talking to you after the second period thinking that Osland was like almost like trying to do too much. Mm-hmm. And but again, it did look like he settled in. But also, it's him away from the puck that is actually the most impressive thing when it comes to defensively or even like where to go without having the puck, knowing where to be. And it's all kind of tough with the Prospects Challenge because you're playing with guys that you really don't get to play a lot with. Players that come from all walks of the hockey world, and the next thing you know, you're all lumped together, and they try to get you with players that you could be familiar with, but a lot of times you're going with guys that you're not seeing very often.
Yeah, and for the Sabres, I mean, they kind of lucked out this year. I mean, you had all five of those players at one point last year playing in the AHL together. You had Yuri Kulik and Isak Rosén, who have been playing together for the past 2 years. They're best friends on and off the ice. And then last year, you had Anton Wahlberg come over from Sweden at the end of his season to play some extra games with Rochester. Same thing with Noah Osland. And then Ryan Johnson was a guy who last year got a good chunk of games in the NHL before going back to the AHL. And while he was playing with the Amerks, still played pretty well. Still, he's got some room to grow, but I think that's huge to for the last game here and for the next two games here at the Prospects Challenge. Like Kulik, it's to show, hey, this summer I really put the work in to try and not only get stronger, but also work in other areas of my game that will translate on the ice, in game action, in practice, to be able to show to the NHL team, okay, either A, this kid is ready to go right off the bat and be a day one starter in the lineup, or B, you're going to be the first one that we're going to be calling Mike Leone in Rochester and being like, hey, we need to call up somebody. We want to call up this player. And I think that Kulik definitely showed that yesterday. I think Ryan Johnson is definitely showing that this year. It's all about everybody else after that. And I think Noah Osland showed well. I think Anton Wahlberg showed well. I would have liked to have seen a little more from Isak Rosén a little bit yesterday, but you know, there's still two games left. He could play the next two games and really wow everybody and, you know, kind of carry that momentum similar to what Zach Benson did last year. Zach Benson had a pretty decent Prospects Challenge, and then he went to training camp and just showed the Sabres, you're not going to be able to send me down to juniors. I'm going to make this a very difficult decision. They did, and he went out there, proved that he could play in the NHL, and didn't look out of place the entire year, which I think was super impressive.
And one of the reasons that the scouting report was big on Konstal Helenius from this past draft was he could be a guy that could end up making that kind of ascent. I would say a bit of a rough showing from him yesterday. Within the first minute, the guy got crunched in the corner, and it was a tough hit. But, of course, he gets up right away, tries to settle in for a screen on the first real scoring chance, all within the first minute of him playing in Buffalo for the Prospects Challenge there. What did you think about Helenius yesterday and what he could do?
I think at first he definitely looked like he was trying to get maybe a feel for the game. I think he was maybe a little nerves or jitteriness out there. He definitely did not look like the type of player that, you know, watching him develop throughout the year and seeing the highlights of him, you know, there's a certain comfort level that you have. Konstal Helenius has been playing over in Europe for the past 2 years and mostly playing on a larger ice surface. And obviously with larger ice surfaces, you've got a little more room to breathe. You got a little more room to be a little more creative and just have that free flowing nature to your game. You get to these smaller rinks in North America And it's a little bit of a shell shock for some of these guys. And not to say that Konstantin Hellenius was overwhelmed by that, but I think you could tell early on that he was just getting a feel for how things were kind of flowing in the smaller rink. He's played a little bit in the smaller rink with some of the World Juniors and the World Championship, or not the World Championships, but like the Under-18 World Championships. They usually play on the smaller rinks, and I think at least for the World Juniors he did. And either way, he comes over, and I think it was just about him getting used to the smaller ice, getting used to a little bit of a faster pace. And it showed for the first couple of periods. And the third period, he looked like he was a little more creative out there with the puck and being a little more comfortable. Yeah, he missed a wide open net on a scoring chance. And I don't know if the goalie, Nolan Lalonde, was able to get over. It looked like he did and maybe try get some sort of piece. But that's one where, in a normal circumstance, you'd like to see him score. But for his first game over in, you know, North America, mind you, being exhibition and against players of his level, I thought it took him a little bit to get used to the style and the speed of everything. I wouldn't be surprised if Konstantin Hellenius, if he plays the next two games, looks much more comfortable, looks much more willing to be a little more creative out there to try and create some plays. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how he's going to play, especially tonight against the Devils, and rebounding from that first game, learning from that first game, and how that translates to game two and eventually game three on Monday.
Did I see the Devils went 9-1 against Ottawa yesterday?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, listen, I was looking.
Oh, Ottawa. Keep Ottawa-ing.
Well, Melissa, I was breaking down their roster a little bit yesterday, and the Devils have an okay roster. I mean, some of their top prospects, I mean, their first round pick this past year is playing in Russia, so he's not coming over. They got a couple other guys that are all right, but, you know, they're not anyone that's going to be probably ready to jump into the NHL right away. Ottawa is just, their prospect depth is a complete mess, but they've had inept management for the past few years. They haven't had the greatest of ownership situations. It's getting a little better now, but yeah, that's a mess there in Ottawa. And the Senators, I don't see a way that they could be any good in the next 3 to 5 years. It's not looking good for them at all.
Brayton Wilson joining us here on the West Terror Hotline. You can hear more from him tonight with Paul Hamilton and Brian Koziel, as they call Sabres and Devils, 7 o'clock, 6:45 pregame, right?
Correct, yeah. We'll be on a little bit beforehand. We'll do a little pregame roundtable and talk things over before we drop the puck at 7.
Well, I got plenty. I still have more questions. I just wanted to promo you for a little bit
friend. I'm fine with that.
So looking toward training camp now, those practices will begin next week. And so we're getting to it. We're getting to the true part, one of the truest parts of the elite season, Brayton, where everything's back, including hockey, including the Sabres. They'll have some scrimmages next week as well. Mm-hmm. This is where things are going to start ramping up. Of the players in this prospects tournament, who are the ones that you think could pull the Zach Benson this year?
Well, I mean, certainly it's a little difficult, just because the only player that really you could kind of compare Zach Benson to is Konstantin Hellenius, because he was drafted right out of juniors or wherever he was drafted in his draft year, and then the very next season he's playing professionally in the NHL. I would like to think that Hellenius at least maybe gets a look in the NHL at some point this season. I don't think it'll be right off the bat. It might be towards the end of the year. But if we're looking at a prospect that has the best chance to start the year, I mean, right off the bat, I think Jiří Kulík is the name that you look at. Just the way that he showed the strength and the speed and the overwhelming power that he had last night against other players of his same level, it speaks volumes. When you see that, you think, okay, you see that right now, that might be the type of play that can actually translate over into training camps, into getting the opportunity to make an NHL roster right off the bat. And in last year, you know, Zach Benson, he kind of did it with just being super strong on the forecheck, just being a smart player with his stick, and really just going to work. And that's exactly what he did at the Prospects Challenge and training camp. He earned that spot in the preseason, and then he earned his NHL roster spot. And again, as I said earlier, didn't look out of place. And I think that was the most impressive part, was because I think at first we were thinking, all right, Zach Benson's going to make the roster, but he's probably going to go back to the juniors afterwards, after his 9-game stint, right? There's no way that he's going to be able to to stick it out and supplant himself in the Sabres lineup for the whole year. And that's exactly what he did. And he played with a ton of confidence. He played like he was playing in the league for a few years. So, and that was the most impressive part. And I think that if we're looking at this group right now, I think it's Jiří Kulík that has the best chance. I think Isak Rosén, just because of where he was drafted and what year he was drafted, I think he's going to be right behind. I think he needs to do a little more to prove that he's got the ability to not let the physical style of the NHL overwhelm him, because he's certainly a skilled player. He's got speed. He's got the playmaking abilities. He handles the puck well. It's just, I think last year in the NHL, we saw that when there's a little bit of physicality that comes into it and other players start to take him with the body, he starts to fade away. His presence starts to fade away, and he's not really effective. So if he's able to overcome that, I think he's probably the next best option. And then again, after that, could Anton Wahlberg, could Konstal Hellenius be a player that makes his way? Could Noah Östlund be a player that makes his way up to the NHL to get a couple of looks? That it certainly would be interesting.
And Brayton, of course, as training camp is going to be heading in next week, one of the big things to look out for here is, what is this team's outlook overall? They look fast. They look like they're going to be faster. They look like they might be more defensively responsible. But outside of that, it looks like it might be, let's see, should I bring out the quote from Deadpool and Wolverine? Yeah, it does look like a little bit of an educated wish that it's all about rebounding for the core to be one of their biggest tracks to success for this year.
It'll be interesting to see what Lindy Ruff's vision is with this team heading into training camp, heading into the preseason, and eventually into regular season action when the games matter. I think the thing right off the bat that I think we all know is this team is definitely going to be tougher to play against. They've got guys that, yeah, while they're not the most offensively gifted players, they're fast, they're physical, they're not afraid to get their nose dirty, whether it's along the boards or right in front of the net. You know, you think of guys like Nick Aubé-Kubel, you think of Beck Malenstein, you think of Ryan McLeod. Those guys are fast players. They're gonna dictate the pace of play when the puck is on their stick, just because they know it's get down the ice, get to the net, and just create havoc in the other end. And then you have the talent on the roster, like the Tage Thompsons, the JJ Paterkas, the Jack Quinns, the Alex Tucks, and those type of players that are going to create offensive opportunities in other ways. But I definitely do believe that when those guys, the top guys, are a little bit challenged by some of the other better players or more physical players or something like that, you're going to see that the third and fourth line guys, they're going to go out there on the ice and they're going to say, we're not going to take this BS from you guys anymore. We're not going to back down. This isn't going to be something where, you know, you're just going to be able to take advantage of us. And I think even the Sabres last night in the prospects challenge showed that a little bit, where Columbus looked like the team. They wanted to go out there and they wanted to bully the Sabres around. Their prospects wanted to go hit everyone, throw everybody to the ice and show, like, you're not going to be allowed to take advantage of us because we're going to just bully you into submission. And the Sabres just said, they didn't back down from that. They said, okay, you could try that all you want, but we're still going to skate all around you. We're going to be the faster team. We're going to be the smarter team. We're going to take pucks to the net. We're going to create scoring chances, and we're just going to suffocate you and suffocate any life that you may have in your own end. How do you like that? And I think that if that translates to the NHL style, I think the Sabres will be much better off than where they were last year under Don Granato. And again, I liked Don Granato. I liked the way that he helped turn the team and the culture around here. I just don't know, and I think it showed last year, how much more he was able to get out of the group that was already here and to making them a team that's going to be the team that nobody wants to play, the tougher team to play against. I think Lindy Ruff, yes, while I think the criticism is fair that he was brought in maybe way too early and they didn't give it enough time to interview the Sheldon Keefes of the world or some of these other coaching candidates that they had. I think they had a vision of, we want to bring in Lindy Ruff, a guy that we know very well, we know his style of coaching, and bring that to Buffalo and see if that's going to translate into success with the people we're looking to bring in, with the people that are already here and the prospects that we have coming up. And I think if it all kind of comes together in year one, I think that's an added bonus. It may not come together this year. They may miss the playoffs again. They'll be very close. I think they're going to be a fringe team. But if they could put anything together heading into year two, I think they're going to be a dangerous team.
Brayton, Sometimes, like, you mentioned that, though, like, with how Columbus wanted to bully them and, like, smack them around. It was a very physical front from the Blue Jackets yesterday, but it does show a bit of toughness in a different sense of the definition, too. I like that they, like you said, they just kept getting up, making plays, and not be altered or affected by the fact that they were getting thrown around on the ice because Columbus was just trying to hit everything that moved. So toughness does come in a way that it's not always typically projected. Like people say, oh, you want a tougher hockey team. Right. You want them to throw the body around. No, toughness also could be just getting smacked five or six times and it doesn't change anything that you do.
Yeah, and I think that is the huge part of what is supposed to be of this Sabres team going forward. You don't have to build a team that's going to go out there. You don't have to build a team full of Matt Rempes that are just going to go out there and fight everybody and punch their faces in. You want guys that are just, they're going to take the hits, they're going to take certain blows, but they get up and it doesn't faze them. It's just, we're going to go and we're just going to dominate in other facets of the game. We're going to be faster than you. We're going to be smarter than you. We're just going to control the pace of play. The possession numbers will be all in our favor. You know, and that's where the hockey analytics and the nerds and the way that, you know, the physical style, the old school, that's how it comes together. That's how it should come together. It's yes, you're going to want to beat us up. You're going to want to outmuscle us. But at the same point, we're going to use the smarts and we're going to use the possession to just suffocate anything that you do. But at the same point, you're going to go out there and bully us. Well, we're going to give it right back to you. We're not going to be afraid to go and send a guy like Obe Kubel or Malenstein or Sam Lafferty out there or Jordan Greenway out there and just be like, yeah, no, cut it out. We're not going to take it. And, you know, shove it back in their face a little bit. And I think that if the Sabres can put it all together like that, you know, I think there is an opportunity for this team. Now, listen, they're probably not going to be a top three team in the division. The Atlantic Division is still very good. It might be a little bit before the Sabres are finally able to supplant themselves as a top three team in the division. They might be a wild card team this year. That's probably where I'd peg them. But I mean, if their guys like Malenstein, Kubel, Lafferty, Greenway, some of these other guys that they have, allow them to open up for other guys like J.J. Paterka, Tage Thompson, Dylan Cousins, Jack Quinn, Zach Benson even. If they're allowed to open the game up for those guys, the skilled, talented guys to go out there, put the puck in the net and create scoring chances, that'll be a huge boost for Buffalo. And if they're able to do that, with the way that they've got the young talent and the makeup of the team, it will be very interesting come late March, early April to see where they're sitting in the standings and whether or not they're either A, in the playoff hunt or in the playoff picture. I mean, and what I mean by in the playoff hunt is maybe they're just on the outside looking in. And then if they're in the playoff picture, they're in the playoffs at the time that we're talking about it. And it's like, okay, how do you maintain that spot and don't fall out of the playoffs? So then you're, you know, ended up with your 14th straight season of missing the playoffs.
Two seasons ago, that was fun. Like being in the playoff picture and then hunt, like kind of like really in the thick of it throughout the entirety of the second half of the season. So that would just be fun to be back to. Let's get back to that kind of fun, hopefully, here and be able to talk more about it. Brayton, have fun tonight as you're back down there for a sold-out version of the Prospects Challenge tonight. You cannot get tickets tonight, but you can still buy them for Monday's game as well. So have fun with you, Brian Koziel, Paul Hamilton, all on the call, at least for us here on WGR, starting at 6:45.
Well, thank you, Derek, and thanks for having me on today. Appreciate it.
I always appreciate you, buddy. We'll get lunch sometime soon.
Sounds good.
All right, that's Brayton Wilson here on the West Hur Hotline. You'll hear from Brayton, from Paul, and from Brian for tonight's Prospects Challenge against New Jersey. Tonight, again, 6:45 pregame right here on WGR. Evan's going to be on the board for the game, so he'll be here and ready to go here in the action, hearing Paul and Brian do some play-by-play as well, bust out the chops to call those games. I like hearing Paul on play-by-play, by the way. I really do. He's got a knack for it. But we got to delete this because Paul can't hear me talk nice to him because him and I were causing trouble during the second intermission. So, but we come back. Hey, you know what? Everything's on the table. 803-0550. I know that I wanted to get a little bit of hockey in there. Bills, dominant. Loved talking to Josh Reed in the first hour, by the way. We'll talk to Greg Thompson at 1 o'clock as well as we get more into the Bills at a 2-0 spot here with a nice little challenge coming up here through the next couple of weeks for them, as this schedule is a very fascinating one for the Bills. All of it's on the table here for you on a Sports Talk Saturday. Derek Kramer, Evans on the board. You're listening to WGR.
I'll be honest, I'll just tell him to retire. It's not worth it. It's not worth to play the game. I haven't witnessed anything like I've seen that's happened to him three times. Scary. You can see right away the players' faces on the field. You can see the sense of urgency from everybody to get Tua help. I just think at some point, you know, he's going to live longer and he's going to play football. Take care of your family.
That's Raiders head coach Antonio Pierce on Tua Tagovailoa after the concussion that was suffered against Buffalo on Thursday night. And I got to say, it's tough to watch that happen. Always is. Because it's a brutal reminder of what the game is. It's a physical sport. It is a physical game. It's not something that where these injuries won't happen. And to see it from Tua again, the fencing position, it tells you that it's continuing to get more and more severe the more head contact that he ends up getting into. That's the troubling portion of it. It's not the fact that concussions are just a thing that we watch happen. It's the fact that this player in particular has had another major concussion that you go ahead and look at it and go, you got to think about what he's going to have to deal with for the rest of his life. And you hope that he's able to make the right decisions, but in due time too. Am I expecting that the player is going to retire after the season? No, I'm not expecting it from him. I think that Tua is a competitor. And even on that play that gets him concussed, that's the reason why. He goes forward head first into trouble when he's had this history. And it's more of he thinks about the game and he loves the game. And it's tough to walk away from for a lot of athletes. Oftentimes in careers, you see them walk away a little bit too late. As a fan, you don't want to see him continue to subject himself to this. I just don't know if he is willing to walk away right away. And obviously this conversation could change, but I won't be surprised if he tries to trot himself back out there again, because that's what athletes and competitors want to do. And that's the sobering reality of it all. I hope everything goes okay with him, and I hope that they're able to keep him as healthy as they possibly can. But man, the way they went about it in 2022 after the Milano hit, the Dolphins are very complicit in what has happened to him. To have him trot out there on a short week against the Bengals in 2022 after that play and have the audacity to call it a back injury as well was sickening at best. And FCC finable, if I said the words, at worst.
Yeah, let's not do that.
Yeah, no, I don't want to do that. I like my job. Also, I like my money that I barely have. But you want to see him as a person be okay. Like, that's why you try to see athletes going for that contract. That's why they try to do it. It's because their career can be taken out in a grisly manner at any point. From a leg injury that shreds someone's knee to the point where it's no return, to, heck, look at it here. Of course, the Damar Hamlin incident is one that everyone will turn to, but I'll bring up Micah Hyde. Micah Hyde's neck injuries have cut him short, quite honestly. And that's a player that still had a lot left. Like, we all talked about, like, oh, Poyer's washed up. That's why the Bills were okay to let him go. And for Hyde, it's because of those injuries, but Hyde still looked like Hyde when he was healthy. The problem is he's not that anymore. And that's what happens in football, is that injuries will cut careers short. And that's something that's absolutely looking like that might happen here. So it's tough to see. I don't like when you see something like that, because one, it saps all the energy out of it for me. Doing that overtime show, I kind of will admittedly say I mailed it in. because that play dragged the energy out of me. I didn't really feel like talking that much at that point, because you see a play like that and it's just a reminder that, yeah, football has a little bit of a barbaric sense to it where we all watch it, we all spend money, and in a gladiatorial sense, modernized, some of these players go down with injuries that are brutal to see. And they, of course, it's football, it happens, but that doesn't mean that it's not discouraging. And it also took a lot of the fun away out of me being like this petulant child toward the Miami fan base, because the first thing you're thinking at that point is you hope that the player is okay and the person is okay. Because as Antonio Pierce says in that clip, you're going to live a lot longer than you're going to play football. And that's the part that is the most concerning with Tua there and with the Miami Dolphins as a whole. But if Tua does have to walk away from his career, I find the Dolphins coaching staff complicit in the act, because what they did in 2022 after the Bills game was, or even during that Bills game, was foolish. So it is their fault if their quarterback is no longer with them. And that's that. Maybe they get themselves back in order. Maybe Tua is able to play again, but everyone's going to be concerned if they see number one in teal showing up again on the field anytime soon. He's an automatic out for week three already, even though Miami's got 10 days. Because there's no way that the PR team would even let you do that at that point. Like, if the player was like, yeah, no, I'm okay, and like the neurologist is like, yeah, he's okay, there's no way the PR team says, you're going like hell he is. And for Miami this season, that could be tough on a strictly football standpoint. Because yeah, you keep having this team that has promise and they keep finding ways to not be able to fulfill it. And that is probably far more frustrating than anything that we've dealt with as Bills fans. Well, 17-year playoff drought? No, we were bad during those times. Like, we didn't have hope. So with Tua, it's obviously hope the player is okay first. And if he's not, like I said, I find the Dolphins complicit in this far more than the violent game of football itself. Because they were fools to rush him back into that game in 2022 like they did, causing him to have a concussion the very next week. It is what it is. And unless anything were to come, we don't know what's going to happen with that entire situation. But it's going to be a while before we even think about seeing anything go forward with Tua and Miami and everything else of the like. We'll get connected to our fans real quick. It's brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Go to Ken in Lackawanna. Ken, what's going on?
Hi, guys. Nice talking today. Got a question about Tua's contract.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of ramifications does that have in the NFL with their cap? And if he's forced to retire and or is cleared to come back and still retires?
Ken, I'm not going to go ahead and pretend to be a cap expert here. It's something I could ask Greg Thompson when he comes in at 1 o'clock. But when it comes to an injury like that, there might be clauses in their contract that was signed. There might be protections in place, but there's also LTIR for that sort of thing as well to mitigate whatever cap damages might be done. There might be ways around that for Miami to be able to get out of a heavy cap hit for him for a while, especially if the injuries happen the way they do and he has to retire. One, I don't think the cap is going to be the thing they're going to be concerned about at that point. But two, there's probably ways around it is the other portion of this. So I don't know if they're going to be really hamstrung if Tua has to retire. And that's the cold nature of the business. The fact that they'd be able to move on relatively quickly. But also, you try to think about those things when you're writing in contracts, and there are protections for teams and players to still get their money while also not affecting the cap as well. All right, we'll come back, wrap up the second hour, and then Greg Thompson, Cover One, joining us coming up in about 12-ish minutes or so. Sports Talk Saturday keeps moving on here on WGR. We're behind the sticks. We got to get into a third and manageable here as we get Greg Thompson of Cover One coming up next. But it's not like I'm going to have a pretend segment here. You know, we'll ask a question or two that is of some nonsense variety, because that's kind of what I do. Picked up Star Wars Outlaws. It's a fun game to play if you like that Star Wars stuff and going pew-pews. It's a good game to play. Like
also, RIP to Vader.
James Earl Jones, big time.
I don't know if that was before this past Saturday. I'm assuming.
No, it was. Yeah, it was this week.
It's still. What would you say is his best? I feel like everybody's going to say Darth Vader, right?
I mean, the man played Vader and Mufasa. I don't know if
I know.
Anything.
Mufasa, I feel like I would. I don't know.
I don't think there's anything more peak than that with what's most recognizable for him, though.
Right.
But that voice is one that, like, you can't recapture that.
Best voice ever?
Iconic. And I remember the story that he had said about they were looking at possibly recruiting or getting Orson Welles for Darth Vader.
Right, yeah.
And they thought he was going to be too recognizable. And then, like, what would end up becoming with James Earl Jones' performance with Darth Vader? Like, yeah. With anything that he did ever after that, it was like, hey, you got Vader.
If you ever hear, now I don't want to make, put crap on David Prowse, who was the actual actor in the Darth Vader suit. But if you hear what he sounds like,
he's the physical manifestation. And like,
right.
I remember watching that same clip though, and the production crew was like, we were excited, but it was also terrifying. Like, is that what our guy is going to sound like? No.
Some Scottish guy?
Yeah, exactly. That clip. And no, not even close. So RIP to the man, the myth, the legend, James Earl Jones. But yeah, no, I'm still trying to have some fun, play little games every now and then. College football, still very good. I still get humbled every now and then now. I'm still bad at it. If I try to play against other people, I will get humbled. But right now it's a grudge match between me and the computer, and I want everyone else to stay out of it.
I hate video games that just get people angry. Besides, it's, like, the Mario Karts, but that's also...
Oh, yeah, no, like, I can never play, like, an Elden Ring where it's, like, you misstepped 2 centimeters, you die.
I know. stuff like that is just
ridiculous.
It's
too tough, yeah. Like, I want it to be something to enjoy and just, like, get out of my dumb brain.
Because I feel like if you try to find a game that people just will end up hating because other people are
that said, I do like that college football... And it's dynamic. It tries to challenge you on schemes and chess matches because, like, you guys have watched a game with me. Like, I'd point out things that are going on schematically out in the newsroom. So it does tap into that a little bit of the fascination with formations, schemes, and everything like that. And we'll talk more about that with Greg Thompson coming up next here on WGR.